Welcome to Australian Women Preach, a podcast that aims to raise women's voices in preaching the gospel. Our intention is to model the church we want to be, inclusive, diverse, and welcoming. Brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and The Grail in Australia. Michelle Eastwood is a feminist theologian who's interested in shame, gender and sexuality, the Hebrew Bible, worship and liturgy, and public theology. She often has more questions than answers and loves to discuss theology with anyone who's interested. Michelle is a fan of women's stories, whether they be in books, on TV, or in movies.
Welcome. Today I'm reflecting on the Gospel reading for the 20th Ordinary Sunday, found in Luke 12, 49-53. Just four short verses. But before we dive in, I'd like to acknowledge that I live and work on the unceded lands of the Wadawurrung people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders past and present, and I call for treaty with reparations for the damage that has been done by us colonisers. Now let us turn to the Gospel reading, Luke 12, 49-53. Today I'm using the NRSV UE translation. I must admit that there's much about this reading that I don't claim to understand. The statement that Jesus has come to cast fire on the earth is clearly metaphorical, and my mind immediately connects it with images of the refiner's fire, a fire that is incredibly hot and that burns away impurities. However, it's unclear how this statement relates to the teachings that come before or after it. It's followed by an equally problematic claim. I have a baptism with which to be baptized, and what constraint I am under until it is completed. Now, I am not a New Testament scholar, and I can't read this text in Greek to see if there is more to it than the translation obscures, so I do not claim to know what to do with this statement. As an aside, I think that the church would be in a much healthier state if we were more willing to admit we don't always understand the meaning of these ancient scriptures. Therefore, it's the second section of the reading that I'm going to reflect on. In verses 51 and 52, it says, "Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, five in one household will be divided, three against two and two against three. They will be divided father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law." Luke presents this statement as part of a whole series of teachings that Jesus gives on his way to Jerusalem. The start of the chapter notes that Jesus is addressing a crowd, although only slightly before this passage in verse 41, Peter asks if Jesus is talking to the crowd or to the disciples. It's unclear from this chapter who this particular part of the message is for. The parallel teaching in Matthew's retelling is within the context of the sending out of the disciples. To me, this makes much more sense because the message that the disciples are being instructed to bring might very well be divisive. We only need to look at our contemporary context to know that people's understanding of the Bible and of what God means or wants in any given context is deeply divisive. I work within the Lutheran Church of Australia, where the issue of the ordination of women has been debated for many years. There are many who believe that this issue will split the church. I worship within the Uniting Church, where the acceptance of two understandings of marriage, that is, marriage is between two people, and that marriage is between a woman and a man, is also seen as a threat to unity. And as I'm recording this, a number of sports people are refusing to wear a uniform with a rainbow on it because of their religious beliefs. These are just some contemporary Australian examples of issues that I am aware of that might bring division to the church, and the range of churches and denominations that exist throughout history and in the world today, within what is claimed in the Creed as the one Catholic and Apostolic Church, demonstrates that division has always been part of our story. Many of these diverse churches claim that they have the truth and that they know what God really means and wants, as opposed to the church down the road who does things a little differently. Once we are sure we know what God is thinking or feeling or desiring, it's easy to denounce anyone who thinks differently. and to find a scriptural or biblical reference to back our perspective up. However, what I find really interesting in this passage is the examples used about who will be in conflict: fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, mothers-in-laws and daughters-in-laws. This is a very gendered list, and it goes from those who have most cultural and social authority at the time of writing to those who have least. If I was to try to explain it, I think I would suggest that fathers and sons potentially have conflict over who has the greater authority. In my work on aging, the giving over of authority from one generation to another is an ongoing potential source of conflict. As a son grows and has a family of his own, he may want more authority in the family than the father is willing to give. This is especially true if all the members are living in the same house. The father may not recognize his declining capacity and/or authority, and the son may be impatient to be the boss. Mothers are perhaps less likely in this conceptualization to have conflict with their sons because the son gains authority over his mother as soon as he becomes an adult. In contrast with her daughters, a mother has the responsibility to prepare her daughter to live in another family's house, and the performance of the daughter is reflected back onto the mother's worth. I'm thinking of Daphne and Violet Bridgerton from the TV series Bridgerton, who quarrel when Daphne accuses Violet of not preparing her adequately for marriage, particularly in terms of what to expect sexually on her wedding night. I relate to Violet, who I see as wanting to protect Daphne and her other daughters, and who struggles with her own discomfort when talking about difficult subjects. There is every chance she wasn't well prepared either, and this connects with taboos around talking about sex, particularly talking about the potential pleasures of sexuality and sexual expression. Of course, this all plays out within a raft of social expectation for girls that requires them to be virginal and pure pre-marriage, but be able to please their husband in the bedroom as soon as the vows have been said. There is rightly much contemporary critique about how this form of purity culture sets women and girls up for difficulties within a range of social contexts. Another popular example is Gilmore Girls. Lorelai has a very difficult relationship with her mother, Emily, who acts as if she always knows what's best for Lorelai and often communicates that Lorelai does not meet her expectations. The relationship between Lorelai and her daughter Rory is much closer. However, there are still moments across the series where Lorelai and Rory fight and wrestle with difficulties in their relationship. In raising my own kids, I was very aware that I was so much more anxious for my daughter than for my sons, in no small part because I knew the pressures that are placed on young women in our patriarchal world, even while acknowledging that the limits placed on women are not fair or reasonable. In my own life, I've been blessed with two wonderful daughters-in-law, but I'm well aware that the tension between a mother-in-law and her daughter-in-law is often the basis of horror stories and misogynistic jokes. These two women are often seen as vying for the attention of the son/husband and fighting over the correct way of running a household. I think this mimics the wider move, which pits women against each other in competition for limited resources, often centered on men and their authority, with one woman ultimately being seen as the winner, meaning the other loses. Although I would suggest that this presumably natural competition means that everyone ends up losing. It's interesting that the NIV suggests this text is a quote of Micah 7 verse 6. In Micah, these oppositions are placed within an oracle of judgment. The Micah passage reads, "Put no trust in a friend, have no confidence in a loved one. Guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your embrace. For the son treats the father with contempt, the daughter rises up against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Your enemies are members of your own household." In this passage, the younger partner is each time presented as fighting against the elder, son against father, daughter against mother, daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. This reminds me of the perennial cross-generational complaints, which often begin with moaning about the disrespectful, lazy, not quite right younger generations. In our time, it's often the millennials who receive this judgment, although growing up, I remember any number of think pieces about the failings of Generation X. In the context of the Micah reading, godlessness is to blame for the division within families, not the message of God. So is division because of God's message, or because people have turned away from God? Or is division just part of the human experience? If we return to the Garden of Eden, the very first outworking of eating the fruit is that Eve and Adam hide themselves from each other and from God. Before eating, they are naked and unashamed. They have no need to cover up or place a protective barrier between themselves. After eating the fruit, the clothing made of vines hides their perceived flaws and vulnerabilities. Perhaps this applies to the Lucan passage as well. Perhaps the division is not about God's message per se, but it is about the way the message makes us feel. It may make us feel self-righteous, affirmed, convinced that we know what God wants, and willing to lord our knowing over others. Alternatively, it might make us feel unworthy, ashamed, not good enough, and desiring to hide away. Of course, it could be a mixture of these and other feelings. And the feelings probably have as much to do with messages we have received about God, about the church, and about Christianity, as they do about God's actual message, assuming that as humans, we even have the capacity to understand God's message completely and without distortion. Perhaps this is why the fire is needed. The refining fire burns away all the dross that humans have added to the message, so that we're left with the core ingredient, which is pure love, love which transcends all division and includes and affirms all. And perhaps the baptism is a public acknowledgement that all should be welcome and safe in this community. Perhaps one day our churches, our communities, and our world will be able to move beyond the divisions and see the value inherent in every single person.
You have been listening to Australian Women Preach, brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and The Grail in Australia. You can find out more about WATAC at watac.net.au and The Grail at grailaustralia.org.au. The music in this podcast is from the song Truth, from the album Into Silence, by songwriter, musician, theologian and teacher Danielle Ann Lynch. You can hear the full version on Spotify.